President Trump is meeting with allies again this morning. This is the second day of the NATO summit in Brussels.
And you wouldn't know it from the criticism that Trump aimed at NATO allies yesterday, but some important decisions have actually already emerged from this summit, and the U.S. is on board with them. Not everyone in Washington shares Trump's apparent disdain for NATO.
And let's turn to NPR White House reporter Ayesha Roscoe, who has been covering the president's trip and was covering the NATO summit in Brussels. Good morning, Ayesha.
Good morning, David.
All right. So President Trump's Twitter rants aside, it sounds like there was some serious substantive agreement among the NATO allies, right? What came out of this whole summit?
Yes, the leaders agreed to this declaration that basically outlined these commitments for the alliance going forward. Most of this had been worked out ahead of time. And they, the group also agreed to call out Russia on its, basically saying that the group had messed up its security, saying that Russia was wrong on security when it came to annexing Crimea, and also the group.
Okay, Ayesha, I'm having a little trouble. I'm not sure if you can hear us well, or if we're having a trouble with the connection. You hearing us?
It's out. Oh, gosh, I was like, here we go.
All right, we're going to turn, we're going to try to get the connection back with Ayesha. President Trump, of course, at the NATO summit, he's going to be moving from there to London for another big visit. And NPR's Frank Langfitt is in London getting ready for that visit. Hello there, Frank.
Hey, David.
So it sounds like one of the big themes of this visit, even though President Trump is going to be sitting down for tea time with the Queen, that is not the kind of welcome he is going to be getting from protesters who are going to be filling the streets. So tell us a little bit about what the president is going to be doing, his itinerary, and whether or not he'll be coming close to these protests.
Yeah, sure. Great question. The first protest is actually planned for late this afternoon outside Winfield House. That's the U.S. ambassador's residence right up around Regent's Park. And Trump is going to come there for a meet and greet with the embassy staff. And actually, it's the only place he's going to stop in central London. The rest of the time, he's going to be actually outside the city. There's a black tie dinner tonight at Blenheim Palace. That's the birthplace of Winston Churchill. Tomorrow, he'll be meeting with Theresa May at Chequers. That's the prime minister's estate. And there are going to be bilateral discussions out at Chequers, trade and security talk. It's going to be light on sort of concrete results, more about projecting unity. And this, of course, is coming off, what's been going on in NATO and some of the angry tweets. And I think what the British would like would be send an image and sort of a message that they're united with the United States, they're paying their fair share, working very hard on the military, and they're looking to not get any sort of critical tweets from the president. And then, of course, as you were mentioning, late afternoon tomorrow, he's off to Windsor Castle for tea with the Queen, and then on to a resort, one of his resorts in Scotland, to prepare for Helsinki and President Putin and maybe some golfing.
Well, so really not a lot of time in London.
No.
At all. I mean, is that planned maybe to avoid the protesters? And how is the president going to be getting around?
David, the embassy says, everything's far away. He's going to helicopter to most of these places. But it's clear that the White House doesn't want the president spending much time in London at all, because he just becomes a target for demonstrators. And there are a lot of people who really don't like him here. So he's going to spend most of his time in the air. I ran into some protesters yesterday. They were wearing surgical masks that said Trump stinks, and they think that Trump is afraid of them. The first person you're going to hear from is Minnie Vaughn. She's 31, works in advertising, and the next will be Alice Constamp. She's a TV producer.
I think the fact that he's not taking any meetings in London is quite cowardly.
I think he knows he has a lot of people in London that dislike him. I mean, I think the ratio compared to America is a lot larger.
So we don't know how President Trump feels about these protesters at all. I'm sure he would say he's not afraid at all, but these protesters want him to be, it sounds like.
They do, and I think that they're going to be out in very large numbers probably on Friday to send a message to him.
I have been looking at a photo of this, what looks like some sort of inflatable balloon.
Hard to miss, yes.
Baby. Yep. Trump, tell me more about that, and tell me, did that require approval? Did the city actually approve
this? It did, and this
thing?
is This is very interesting because it's satire, but there's also a political element here, a domestic political element. This is about a 20-foot-tall blimp of a crying baby with a shock of Trumpian hair. And it's really – it looks just like President Trump. He's in a diaper holding a cell phone. Now, the organizers say they're doing this because they want to show the U.S. president as he's perceived by many here and around the world as a crybaby. They're going to launch it from Parliament Square Garden Friday morning along the Thames. And the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, approved it, saying, hey, this is free speech. I'm not going to censor anything. And he's received quite a bit of criticism for that, you know, humiliating the American president, basically. But if you look closely at the relationship between Khan and Trump, there's a bit of payback here. Trump and Khan have been in a Twitter war beginning from at least last year when Trump seemed to deliberately quote Mayor Khan out of context when there was the attack on London Bridge, which you and I covered together. We talked about and basically saying the mayor was saying he wasn't alarmed by all these deaths. Khan is a Muslim, son of a Pakistani bus driver, so people here also perceive this as racist and Islamophobic, just one of the groups that president tends to offend in London. And that's why we'll see some protests today and then perhaps tens of thousands tomorrow.
Oh, bigger protest on Friday, you think?
Yeah, there's going to be – it's going to be hours and hours of protests marching from here where we are in around Oxford Circus all the way down to Parliament. Yeah, it's going to be quite an extravaganza. There's going to be bus. Yeah, it's going to be a big deal.
All right, NPR's Frank Langfitt in London telling us about the preparations for the president's visit. He's heading to Britain today. Frank, thanks.
Happy to do it, David.
All right, here in the United States, with the balance of the Supreme Court in question, abortion rights advocates are beginning to prepare for a future that they are hoping never to see.
Right. That is a future without the protections of Roe versus Wade. Now, if President Trump's nominee to the court, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, is confirmed, that doesn't necessarily mean that Roe v. Wade will be overturned. But we have new reporting this morning about how some abortion rights groups are already preparing for that to happen.
And this reporting comes from NPR's Sarah McCammon, who's with us. Hi there, Sarah.
Good morning.
So just remind us what is at stake here with this nomination when it comes to the issue of abortion.
So, of course, remember, retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy has been the swing vote and has often voted to uphold abortion rights. So if Kavanaugh is confirmed, the court will shift to the right, almost certainly, and very likely on this issue. It's widely expected that Roe versus Wade, which is, of course, the 1973 decision that legalized abortion nationwide, mm-hmm. that it would be substantially weakened, if not overturned altogether. And that would give the say on abortion rights back to the states, with much more latitude to restrict abortion than they have right now. That has reproductive rights advocates worried. I talked to Leslie McGorman. She's the deputy policy director at NARAL Pro-Choice America.
This is a new time. This is certainly all hands on deck. This is certainly like red alert, whatever the phrasing for emergency you may come up with. Like, we are in that state right now.
So NARAL and other groups are working on a couple of fronts. They're mobilizing to try, first of all, to block Kavanaugh's nomination by asking grassroots supporters to contact their senators. And they're also, David, looking ahead to state legislatures to try to prepare for the possibility that abortion rights eventually will be up to the states.
Well, what does that effort look like? What are they doing if they're preparing for a possibility that may or may not happen at the state level?
Right. So more than 20 states right now have laws on the books that could ban abortion if Roe goes away. Activists want to get rid of those laws. Some of them are old pre-Roe laws. They also want to take proactive measures to protect abortion rights and improve access either through state law or in state constitutions even. NARAL says they're putting together some model legislation that state lawmakers could look at. I also talked to the Center for Reproductive Rights. They've been working on making it easier for healthcare providers like physician assistants to provide abortions under state law. They say that would help with an existing shortage of abortion providers in many places and could become especially important if there's an influx of women traveling from more restrictive states to more liberal states to get abortions.
Well, so what about abortion rights opponents? I mean, are they also gearing up for these kinds of fights if we're going to see some of the scene shifting to the state level?
Yeah, I mean, both sides have been having this fight for a long time, and it would just intensify. Mallory Quigley is with the anti-abortion rights group Susan B. Anthony List.
I think that that is where it's going to be very important, where I think both sides are likely to be extra engaged, because this is really going to set the tone for the future of our nation.
She says she'd like to see a 20-week ban, and it has also praised some state laws or proposals banning abortion as early as 6 to 8 weeks. So those are some of the kinds of things we could see under a more conservative court.
Okay. NPR's Sarah McCammon speaking to us this morning. Sarah, thanks as always. We appreciate it.
Thank you.